Thank you. We are going to start telling you that we have organized and structured the Q&A session by blocks, so thematics blocks, and we are going to answer all your questions you may have. Up to now, we have 36 questions, and probably more to come, but it's just to let you know more or less which is the time that we are going to have regarding this Q&A session. We are on time according with the expected program. The first one is regarding renewables. And first question comes from Harry Wyburd, Bank of America, and James Brandt from Deutsche Bank. What proportion of your planned renewables addition gigawatts do you plan to sell fixed subsidy or PPA versus floating wholesale market price or selling to regular supply customer or floating price contract?
So, as I already mentioned before, we have already around 60% of our renewables investment already secure, with, I think, gigawatts are already under construction. So, as I mentioned as well, we have a pipeline of 70 gigawatts, with, I think, is that means that the plan we have already in this moment is to transform half of this into new productive power plant. I think the first thing I would like to say is considering the renewable action we have taken part in 2019 and 2020, our heat rate was already 70%. So every 10 auctions, we got already 7 in all sectors. So I think not only in renewables, in everything. In any case, we are not taking part in all actions. We take only part in some, and depending, because we have already different route alternatives. I think we have already the route of PPAs. We have already signed with many of the largest corporations of the world, which is the case of the United States, companies like Google, Amazon, another one. Another one is we sell directly to our customers. I think we have already customer base very, very large, and I think we are selling to them. So I think it's another point as well is part of those renewables is for replacing our conventional generation. So and for fulfilling the new demands with the during the electrification process.
Yeah. Second question comes from Harry Whiteboard as well, Bank of America. For your market share targets on page 142, what assumption have you made regarding competition? Do you think these are achievable even with complexion from big oil? Competition, sorry, from big oil.
So our position has always welcoming the competition. So I think welcoming the new entrants. You have already seen the figures. I think we need a much higher electrification, so I think there are room for everybody. In any case, we are very sure about our skill and resources. I think as Paco and Pepe has already mentioned and very well explained, I think we are ready in this sense to compete with the same way we've been already competing during our 120 years history. In any case, I think maybe in the next year, so with the new entrants, we'll learn in electricity as much we have already learned during the last 120 years. I imagine that they are already faster in learning. We took to us 120 years to learn what you have already learned, and I think I wish then they will be able to learn as much as we have already learned during these 120 years. But I think competition is welcome, and there are room for everybody.
Harry makes another question, Harry from Bank of America. Is there a risk that new renewables lead to a structurally lower power price in Europe in 5 to 10 years, which would impair profitability on your nuclear and hydro assets? Is this a scenario governments would probably respond to boosting subsidies to support new renewables projects, but nuclear, hydro, and all renewables rolling off subsidies could be stranded on low power price? How do you manage this risk?
Well, I think nuclear, we have the plan of closing. I think the nuclear is, we are in a loss. I think everybody knows that we are losing money with nuclear. So I think the only thing that happened is that I think we've been, we agreed to close this one with the government from 28 to 33 or 34. So I think, I thought if I'm not already saying the thing correct, please correct to me, but I'm trying to do that one. In the case of hydro, I think hydro is already mostly is a storage energy, which has already been, is going to have even more value. So I think it's going to, when the wind blows, it will be a lot of wind. When the sun is shining, it will be a lot of energy. But when they are not wind and they are not sun, I think it's needed already something which is called storage. And the storage is massive, is pumping, what we are using. And I think we have already reconverted many of, almost half of our installed hydroelectric in storage. And that one, which is not a storage, is massive energy. What we have already for weeks or for months. So I think just the opposite. I think our hydroelectric is worth much more value, and that's why the pumping is already needed. In the case of nuclear, the only thing can happen is that that we will force to more rapid closing of that one. I think the fact in nuclear in most countries is just precisely the opposite. I think it's needed for maintaining the service in the case of the United States, and they are already paying, we are paying, I think our distribution companies, we are paying an extra for keeping, for maintaining open the nuclear power plant of our energy vendors. So, but I think it's nuclear, we are in a loss. The only thing would happen is then they can already, if it's needed, they have to pay for maintaining those one open. That is what we have already negotiated. And in the case of hydroelectric, my vision is that storage of energy is going to be crucial. And having already our electric with large dams and with large storage, so I think that is going to provide much more value than what this have today, which when it was already, for those, we have only the running waters model.
Next question comes from Jorge Guimaraes, JB Capital Markets. What are the average CapEx cost considered in plan of offshore wind, onshore wind, and solar PV?
Pepe, can you reply to this one?
Sorry?
You can reply the question.
It's regarding the cost of construction that probably Paco...
Is the construction or the financial cost?
No, it's average cost, CapEx cost.
Ah, CapEx, okay, Paco, sorry.
Well, Jorge, you will understand that we are not do not feel comfortable telling the exact figures we invest in each technology or the cost we have in each production. So, cost and capex is a strategic value for the company. What I can say is that more than the capex invested, what is important is the levelized cost of energy in each of these technology, which is what really matters when you compare with the utility that the different customers have and for their needs. So within this levelized cost of energy, we are pretty sure and we are sure, and if we are not, we do not do the project, that we are going to be competitive, that we are going to be very high in the merit order. In the classical merit order of cost. So that's for sure. Everybody knows that more or less onshore and photovoltaic are in a proportion of 1-2.5 and offshore is probably 3-4 times this. But the specific values, on one hand, I don't have here, and on the other hand, if I would have it, I will not be willing to tell in public because it's part of our strategic knowledge.
And nevertheless, I think I would like to add with this thing that Paco has mentioned, that we are already working in a manner to make already more competitive design. We are already working to have already more operation and maintenance, lower cost. And we are already, yes, with our critical mass of our purchase reducing heavily the cost of our vendors and suppliers. So altogether make us in a very, very competitive position. So in some cases, I think we are already hybridizing our existing fleet of power plants, which I think that already minimize our operation cost. And in other cases, I think we are already making largest installation, which as well minimizing our capex, et cetera, et cetera. As Pepe Paco says, I think we are working very hard in order to minimize the capex and to minimize the opex in order to be already to become much more competitive. But we are very much more competitive. We have not any doubt. So after our 120 years experience in making those things make us already a clear competitive advantage. That's why we are gaining 7 every 10 auctions we are coming. So.
Okay, next question comes from Andrew Mulder, CreditSight, and is regarding the U.S. offshore business. He wrote, Ørsted has reported permitting and authorization delays in the U.S. offshore wind industry. Is there a risk you cannot meet your timetable on Vineyard One and Park City?
So I think it's, we are already in a process. We were already the first mover in the country. I think we won the first auction from Vineyard, so which I think we are already just opening the road to the rest of the investors. So I think the information we got up to now is that the marine permits will be in December. There are not any reason why that is going not to be is going to be postponed and delay, and I think the plant continues the same one. I think we are already in this moment. We have already awarded in Vineyard the substation, which we make already last year. The wind turbine supply we are already selected. The bureau, as I mentioned, the marine energy is already expecting the process in December. So I think we are not already seeing anything for Vineyard. In the Park City, we are still in the early stage, commence it. And the project, I think we present the project to the plan to the Boeing as well, to the marine authorities. I think we present, correct to me, Dennis, if I'm not correct on that one, I see yourself somewhere else. I think it's, it was presented in June. We have already signed the PPA with Connecticut. And the federal permit already progressing according with schedule. So I think we are not seeing anything. In the case of Kitty Hawk, which we have already in North Carolina, I think the your technical survey campaign is concluded. We are already geophysical already working on it. I think we completed as well in October. We submit the grid connections, which I think we expect for identifying what is the best place for the substation. And I think that one. And in the case of New York, I think the new auction we have already presented. I think we make already different offers for 1.2 to 1.3 gigawatts. And we already expect the result will be already beginning of next year. So I think we are already all are in line. Dennis, if you have anything to add, please don't hesitate to say anything you would like to say to add on this point.
The only thing that I would say regarding Vineyard is that we did adjust our schedule previously, and it reflects what's currently on the BOEM website. So, we won't comment, obviously, on Ørsted. But at this point in time, we have no reason to believe that the schedule that we put forward for Vineyard is the right one.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Alejandro Vigil, Cygnus Capital. Opinion on new auction in Spain.
I think I used to say that we are not making the energy policy. The energy policy is already made by governments. I think that the government decide to make auctions, so I think it's their duty to their responsibility to make. Our point is if we will go or will not go to this one. And I think that is something that we will decide depending on the terms of the auction. So I think it's, we feel that when there are enough people ready to make the investment, I don't know why the government is going to have to take already commitment, but I think it's their policy. So I think I have nothing to argue against the government policy. The government policy is that they take the energy policy, they have to take the decision, and it's in our hands to decide to go or not to go.
Question number 7 comes.
Probably we will go, right? So I think I would like to say.
Number seven comes from Jorge Guimarães, JV Capital Markets. What is the EBITDA contribution of hydro in Spain in 2025 EBITDA objective?
Oh, God. I don't know. I don't know.
It's very small. It's not even 100 million.
Huh? Okay.
The contribution is very slow. Small.
Yeah. 8 of your 20 is coming from Alberto Gandolfi, Goldman Sachs. Of your 2025 EBITDA, how much would come from renewables, and when do you believe the step up of renewables in the mix will begin to negatively impact power prices? Number eight. So the question is regarding the when we cuando creemos que las renovables van a tomar el.
When do you think renewables will account for the prices? When will it impact prices? And will account for a big baseload of energy?
Well, it's not going to be a cliff edge effect. It's going to be progressive. So we are seeing now that the prices, and you have seen in our presentations, that the prices we are forecasting or foreseeing for the future are about, 5 to 10 euros per megawatt hour less than they were in the previous missions or editions of our information. So this is going to happen progressively, and the level of around 45 to 50, or if you want 40 to 50, is going to be the trend, and is what we are assuming, and we are managing this. So it's the negative affection is already here, if you want, and is not going to be worse in the future. In a stable way, in a conjunctural way, can happen what happened in March or April, that we have half of this on prices. But in a steady state regime, we don't think it will be so different of around this 40 something.
Alberto is asking as well, you now have 20 gigawatts of shore pipeline. There are likely to be 25 to 30 gigawatts auctions until the end of 2021. In how many will you be able to bid?
So perhaps, Javier, you can already reply. So I think you have more in detail than one, please.
Yes, Chairman, I think that we are going to, as you know, we have just recently present our bid in New York. Next year, I think also there is Massachusetts third possibility, Rhode Island second possibility. We are going to take part in both of them. And also what is the important one, that is the round four in UK, all right, we're actually going to present. It means that it doesn't mean that we are not obviously searching for other opportunities, maybe a little bit outside what is our current, let's say, areas of interest.
We are now passing to the block corresponding to generation and supply, and is José Javier Ruiz from Barclays asks, why do you expect a growing power prices in Spain while the Spanish curve is in back wardation up to 2025? Number 11.
So I think Paco was already explaining that one. It's okay. In the mid long term, I think we expect already a stable wholesale price in nominal terms, which we put in our plan, 45 to 50 euros megawatt hour. I think that we already, the cost of certain technologies will be offset by the increasing demand and inflation. I think they are already as well, and Paco mentioned as well, their period of instability. I think it's moments which are already deriving for the excess of gas or the excess of wind and so on. But I think those are punctual moments. I think we have to look the trend. And I think the trend we are seeing is that those prices are already, we see now, that can already be maintained in the long term. So I think we are not, that is our expectation, and because that is, there are not any reason why that is going to change very much on that one. Punctually it would happen, but the average will be already maintaining this level. That is our expectation.
Now we are going to start with the financial block. First one is come from Javier Suarez, Mediobanca. Why the company has decided to remove the minimum and growing annual dividend commitment included in the previous plan? We don't understand it. Probably it's a misunderstanding of Javier, because we have not removed anything. So,
The dividend.
Why the company has decided to remove the minimum and growing annual dividend commitment?
Not at all. I think we are maintaining our energy policy, our dividend policy. We are maintaining the same payout, and we are already the opposite. We are increasing the flow in the period 23 to 25 from 0.4, that was the previous plan, and to 2.44. So I think we are not already reducing, but I think we are increasing the flow and maintaining the policy.
Next question comes as well from Javier Suarez. Why FFO is now at 22% by 22, while previous business plan was at 24%? Why the company feels comfortable with net debt to EBITDA at 3.7 times versus 3.0 times under the previous business plan?
You reply, Pepe?
Yeah, in the previous plan, we always said that we would never reach those levels. Basically, we got to these levels because we don't have a specific investment plans, but that as investment plans would come, we would go to levels in which we are right now, which are consistent with a triple B plus rating in a world where there are lots of opportunities of investment. We are trying to maintain the solid credit rating while taking the opportunity to increase the investment. So we are comfortable with these levels of net debt EBITDA and FFO over net debt.
Harry Weibor, Bank of America, is asking for the 68 billion gross organic capex. What is the net figure? Okay. And is it the split of the net figure for renewables network liberalized the same as the split of gross on the slide 44?
You reply, Pepe.
I could. We will provide through investor relations.
No, but I think he can.
Yeah, I think the organic capex we have, around 6% of capitalized cost. So this means that net capex would be 64 billion, of which around 52% will go to renewables, and around 35% will go to networks.
Next question comes from Jorge Guimaraes, JB Capital Markets. What type of assets are you considering for the asset rotation, build and sell of renewable assets?
So we receive the same question every plan. And so far, we always have delivered, even sometime in advance, or even much more than was already expected. Today, we have announced a new target of 3 billion. Is from the period 21 to 25. As Pepe mentioned, that represents less than 4% of our investment and less than 3% of our total assets. So I think we have plenty of things that can be sold on that one, as Pepe was mentioning, either in the non-strategic asset, either minority stakes, either things that we can already discover that they are not contributing enough to the company result. The same thing we have already been doing during the past. I think the amount is so low we compare with the size of our investment, with the size of our asset, then we feel the more than achievable those numbers, as always we have already done.
Next question are really three inside one, from Lawson Steele, Berenberg. You intend to raise 5% of your 94 billion euros funds from asset rotation and at the same time to increase your renewables capacity by 3 to 95 gigawatts by 2030. Is that 95 gigawatts a gross number or net holdings, excluding minority, please? Second, can you please talk about the current investor appetite for sell downs and how do you see that developing? And if you could also give us more color around how do you see gigawatts ownership per se versus sell-down opportunities, that would also be very helpful. Thank you, Lawson.
So I think the first number, the 95, I think is our own. So I think those ones what we are making for our own and those ones what we are already consolidating. So to sell or not to sell asset, I think I used to say it always the same thing. I think we are not already a company with our fundamentals is built to sell. Saying that, if somebody is ready to pay a huge amount of money, we are always open to sell a minority stake or to sell the whole business. So I think we are not already in love with any particular piece of our balance sheet or our particular piece of our asset. But I think our ambition is not to build for sale, it's to build for operating and building for already making business with it. So I think we have already sold last year a stake of East Anglia because somebody was ready to pay a lot of money and we were ready to sell minority stake. But I think our ambition is already to make the things for our own, to operate and to make already for our own. But if somebody is ready to offer a huge amount of money, I think we are always ready to listen.
Next question comes from Miguel Bedina, KC Capital. Can you comment on your views on Mexico?
So I think I said already in our last presentation on results. So we were very, very clear on that one. So I think we are not in Mexico, as most countries, I repeat, we are not making the energy policy. So we adapt in every country our investment to the energy policy which every country is defining. So I think in the case of Mexico, I think if they promote a foreign investment, we are ready to analyze those investments. But if they don't promote foreign investment, we are going not to fight against the energy policy of the country. So saying that, I think with the Mexican government, we are already with very open dialogue, and I think we will continue in that one. So I think it's nothing new. I don't know, Enrique, you would like to add anything to this point?
You that we don't make the energy policy. And we have to adapt our investment plan to the decide of the Mexican government.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from Fernando García, Royal Bank of Canada. What would be the 2025 net income, assuming hybrid interest cost is included in P&L?
Well, actually, it will be more or less the same amount because, as a matter of fact, in our projections, we have a slightly higher than 5 billion of net profit. So we were saying, but for to give you a number, more or less, would be around, for 2025, the impact of the hybrids will be around 170 million euros. Eh? But as I was saying, the number will be the 5 billion because in our projections we have a slightly higher than 5 billion.
This question comes as well from Fernando García. What would be the sensitive if we assume 2025 forwards of 42 euros per megawatt hour instead of the 50 that we have already included?
So, well, I think it's, you can already add, Pepe. I think in prices, I think some numbers I got here is for each euro per megawatt hour variation, we represent already 0.3% of the average of the EBITDA.
That is correct.
Is more or less. So.
And around 0.5% in the net profit.
Next is from Stefano Becciato, Credit Suisse. Can you... sorry.
Yes, if you allow me, Chairman, to add something. So this is the pure value of 1 euro per megawatt hour in repercussion on the EBITDA. But now the key question is not whether the forward changed from 50 to 22 to 42, but the key question is whether we are able to keep our margin. I mean, whether we are able to sell at the convenient price or not. If we really are not able to sell to that price and we keep this euro down in the margin, this will be the effect. But if we are able to keep that sales at the right prices, probably lower but with the same margins, this will not be a problem and the repercussion will not be 8 times what the chairman and Pepe has said. So that's very important because sometimes we think that the forward markets, the spot price of the wholesale spot price is the price. No, it's a reference. And we used to sell a quite and completely different price than the reference we are seeing. That's very important.
I think that is very important. I think our 10 or 12 million customers in which we are selling electricity or more, I think, so I think the price is not already referred in most cases what is the spot prices or forward prices. It's already a price we agreed bilaterally, independent of that one. And that is going to happen even more with the PPAs we are signing. So I think not only with those one, if the PPAs is irrelevant, what is the price. I think the price we agreed with Heineken the other day, what we have already signed just a PPA for making all their factories and their production in Spain absolutely using green sources. It's independent what is the price of the market. I think we have already agreed on terms for a long period. Same thing with the United States, with the PPS we have already signed for the next 10 or 50 years. Or same thing in Mexico and another country. So I think it's important at this point, Paco, because I think sometimes we are too obsessed with the spot prices, forward prices. That is a reference that Paco was mentioning, but that is not what is already affecting directly to our results.
Next comes from Stefano Becciato, Credit Suisse, is regarding again about hybrid. Can you explain how the hybrid accounting affects your new targets compared to the previous targets?
Pepe, you reply.
It's a little bit the same answer. As I was saying, can affect in around 170 million for 25 and slightly less than 150 for 22.
James Brandt from Deutsche Bank is asking about the dividend and said on the dividend, the 53-56 cents DPS guidance in 2025 seems to imply a tighter payout than 65%, around the 70% midpoint.
Well, I think
should we view this as an indication that you might move closer to the 70% midpoint that is staying as current at the top of the end of the range?
Our policy is our policy, and the policy is to increase the dividend in line with the increase of EPS. And that makes our range will be between 65 and 75 payout. The another one is an example how that can be to give some numbers. I think if we don't provide numbers, the question will be why you don't provide numbers. If we provide numbers, so we would like to provide the number, but that is in the indicative number. So the different numbers should be a base in the policy, 65 to 75, and growing in line with the EPS in every moment.
Javier Garrido is introducing a set of three questions. First one is, what is the impact to your targets to 2025 if Spanish power price do not grow to €50 megawatts hour as you project and stay the current levels of 44?
I insist again on the same point. So I think we are already quite a lot of PPAs in this moment signed with a certain price fixed. We have fixed or adjusted with something, and we have already a customer base in which the prices is not already, most of them are not related with the wholesale price or with the spot prices. So I think we are confident that the price we are selling, of course, to the market is much higher than this number, and we feel then we can already protect this margin. So I think, as Paco was mentioning before, we are looking for margin more than for prices. So I think the price is already, we are comfortable with that one, and we are not foreseeing then that is going to happen. But it happened, and we said, Pepe was saying already, what can be the effect, which is already minimum in terms of the global plan.
Second question from Javier is, can you explain how a 6 to 7% EBITDA compound on CAGR to 2025 can result in a 6 to 7% net income CAGR in the same period, particularly when you expect a decline in cost of financing?
Sí.
Well, there are two impacts. We have a decline in cost of financing, but the absolute number of financial expenses grow because the debt grows. And then you have to have another element, which is that due to a very large investment plan, our depreciation grows also a lot. So that explains that the EBITDA, the 6-7% growth in EBITDA, drives a 6-7% growth in net profit, the increase in financial expenses and the increase in depreciation.
Finally, Javier is asking about, I understand that your 2025 guidance includes the dilution from the Planet disposal and does not include in net income targets the cost of hybrids. Is that correct?
Sí, Pepe.
Yeah, that is correct.
Well, we are moving towards the hydrogen block, and the first question comes from Jorge Guimarães, JB Capital Markets. What is the cost per megawatt hour of hydrogen electrolyzer considered? The price per kilograms of hydrogen in presentation includes any subsidy?
I think I was already saying, I think today the cost of production of hydrogen with electrolysis is around €2 higher than the cost of the production of hydrogen already made with fossil fuels. So that's why I think that will require some subsidy. I think we are talking about amounts which are not very large. I think we are talking of a few hundreds of million euros if we compare with the subsidies already applied when we started already making in this country solar or wind, so I think that's peanuts if we compare with that one. But I think that is going to reduce on time. I think the size of electrolysis now are very small, so I think that makes it, the cost makes higher. So I think the fact our first electrolysis, which we already ordered with a Norwegian company, Nel, which is one of the largest never been built. I think it's 20 megawatt electrolyzer. I think the size of the existing electrolysis on the size of kilowatts, not megawatts. So I think it's that is going to be one of the largest. But we are sure in the moment that when we make the next ones, I think there's going to be much bigger, and that is going to be reduced. That's why we would like ready to participate in the development of the largest electrolysis, and that's why I announced that we are ready in talks to try to make something in R&D for improving that one in the near future. But I think is not already in this investment is the only investment we have in our plan, which is conditioned to receive the subsidy for making it happen. So I think if we are not already receiving the amount with the European authorities are already promoting, and we are not receiving these subsidies, that case the investment will not make. I think we will need already to have some support for making already that competitive toward what is today production with fossil fuels. And we are already quite convinced that that is going to be already included in the European plan of electrification of the industrial processes, and is going to be included in the Green Deal subsidies for precisely that has been done precisely for that one, and the European hydrogen plan and the Spanish hydrogen plan as well.
Javier Suarez is asking two questions regarding hydrogen. First one is, can you clarify your positioning in the hydrogen value chain? And the second one, are you going to focus on renewables energy that will feed the electrolyzer, or do you intend to invest in the electrolysis as well?
No, I think I said, I think we are already energy producers, and we see that is vectors for increasing the energy demand, the electricity demand. At the same time, that we are already helping to the carbonization of the economy, which is one of our goals as well in terms of our commitment with the climate change. So I think it's, our position in the value chain is very clear. So we would like to make renewables, as much electrolysis as needed for generating hydrogen, green hydrogen, in a manner which can already provide already a competitive environment. So saying that, I think we insist on that one. Today, the size of electrolysis is very small. The numbers of producers are very small. And I think we would like to contribute, as we did 20 years ago with wind, to when we already transformed Gamesa from Gamesa Aeronautica in Gamesa Eolica, to contribute already to push the industry to make already much larger electrolysis and more efficient electrolysis. So I think our ambition is not to be already electrolysis manufacturers, but our ambition is that the electrolysis will be as much competitive as possible to help already on the carbonization of certain industrial processes using already hydrogen instead of fossil fuel or gas.
Stefano Bezzato, Credit Suisse, is asking, the increased penetration of renewables is likely to lead to increased volatility in power prices. In light of this, do you expect governments to address this issue and adopt new power price model?
I don't know. So I don't know what is going to be the policy. So I think it's the volatility. We are suffering the volatility. I don't know how that can be organized. I not any idea. So I think we are working with the existing situation. I think it's moving to different situations. We will analyze those one. But in any case, I think whatever should be the model, if they minimize the volatility, is welcome. So which I think saying that any system we can already reinforce the system reliability using already capacity payment or similar, that is positive for the system. So which is clear is nobody is going to produce something at a loss, and nobody is going to keep already the power plant open and they are already losing money. So I think they are that's why the European authorities are already promoting this mechanism of capacity mechanism or similar, and that is already something which is absolutely compatible with option, et cetera, et cetera. Then we have to play two things, how we keep the lights on and how we can already make that one in a manner we will be already enough attractive for the investment which is required. And that is already with the political leaders are already defining in all countries. So and we will play already the game in this environment, so which I think they have to define if it's needed to define more.
Stefano is asking as well, what is the contribution of green hydrogen of EBITDA and net income by 2025? How significant can this contribution become by the end of the decade?
Well, I think it's, okay, I think it's irrelevant. I think that the amount of that one is very small. I don't know, Aitori, you can already say something, but I think it's, in our total plan, the investment is very, very, very limited, and the returns is already very small. But I think you can add anything, Aitor.
Yes, I think that in 2025, the contribution to the EBITDA is around 40, 50 million euros, no more than this. And at the end of the decade, if we invest what we have considered that is going to depend of the subvention that can be attracted, could be several hundreds of million euros. But in 2030, God knows what is going to happen finally. No?
Next question. So I think it's a good opportunity, but in the short term, is more already just a commitment to help in this direction than a business opportunity. A business opportunity will arrive afterwards, as Aitor is mentioning. If we are first mover, I think the opportunities of capturing already value on that one can already measure in hundreds of millions of euros. But I think for the period, it's already talking in dozens of million, the contribution which can already be provided for this investment.
We have a question regarding hydrogen manufacturers from Martin Young, Investec, that basically is, please, can you comment on the recent deal for a 20 megawatts PEM electrolyzer with Nel? I understand Nel is a leader in alkaline electrolyzer technology, but not in PEM, and wondered if why you choose Nel versus those who lead in the PEM space.
So my feeling is just the opposite. I think it's, I think that the electrolyzer we are buying is PEM, I think, corrigeme, which is the top technology, but I think it's probably in the future we are going to use as well alkaline, because we would like to test both ones. But I think Nel, in our opinion, I think what we make already the choice is to use that one, which is the PEM technology, not the alkaline technology.
We are now, once we have finished with the hydrogen, we are passing to the strategy, more or less strategy question. The first one comes from Javier Garrido, JP Morgan. You assume zero carbon emission in Europe by 2030. What is your vision for your Spanish CCGTs then?
Probably they are going to be used only as backup very few hours. That's why I think... If we are using a few hours, that's why we are already just trying to compensate that one with the plantation of millions of trees, so which I think that compensate that one. So I think, nevertheless, I think for 2030, most of those one, I think our initial combined cycle were built in the beginning of the year 2001, 2002, so they will have already almost at the end of the life, so which I think is... But our feeling is that they're going to be used just few hours, and for these few hours, I think they will be already working few hours if they are already being paid with certain capacity payments, because if not, they cannot be already in operation. I see the way how they've been operating initially as almost base load, and the way they are operating now, which are still working a certain number of operating hours, will be just used for peaks, for a speaker in most cases. And for that one, I think those have to be already paid in one manner or another one to keep those one open. If not, they will be already being closed by this time, which I think, by the way, most of them, they will already complete their operational life for this period.
Next question comes from Martin Young, Investec. Do you see a need for new nuclear in the global energy transition? Or do the levelized cost of energy reductions you set out for renewables mean that nuclear is expensive and yesterday's technology?
I think I'm already in quite a number of forums. I think we have the discussion the other day with MIT, and I precisely on this particular point. My point is that my answer is very clear, is no. And no for two reasons. First, because the cost of renewables is declining very heavily, and they will continue in certain manner. The nuclear, I think, because of the security reasons, that is not so easy to be declined. But in any case, there are two things. One, nuclear requires fuel. I think they require some materials, some uranium for that one, which is a costly material. And second, they are not still a clear solution what to do with nuclear waste. So I think both things has already cost a variable cost toward the renewable. We have not variable cost. I think ICAPES is higher than renewables. And one has already a variable cost. Another one has no variable cost. And the OPEX as well in nuclear is much higher than the OPEX in renewables. So I'm not seeing what is the competitive advantage nuclear toward another one.
Next question, we have two from Alberto Gandolfi, Goldman Sachs. First is, would you consider equity to fund the PNM acquisition or more in general to keep balance sheet flexibility?
So I think it's, Pepe has already presented very clear way how we can to finance. I think I've not seen in the Pepe presentation any needs for further increase in equity. So I think he was telling that with the cash flow generated, plus with the hybrid, plus with the debt, plus with the divestment, I think it's enough for funding and financing this plan. So I think we are not already seeing the need of making any injection of equity on that one. So I think, Pepe, you were very clear on this. So I think I cannot add more than the financial director was already explaining very clearly.
Question from Alberto. What do you think is a sustainable net debt to EBITDA for the business over the medium term?
Pepe?
EBITDA ratio.
Well, I think that this is a reasonable number for a triple B plus rating, Baa1. So I think that this is sustainable. I suppose rating agencies also think that this is a sustainable number. So this is more or less where we think we have the sweet spot in terms of financial leverage. So we are comfortable here.
Okay, we have finished with the first block of 36, if I'm not wrong, question. We have another one of 18. But due to that, we are spending 2 hours and 20 minutes up to now. If you don't mind, I'm going to choose just question for those analysts and investors that has not already made questions. So I will drive you, speakers from Iberdrola, I will drive you through the paper, which question in which block. The first one comes from Rob Poulain, Morgan Stanley, and Meike Becker Bernstein. May we ask the hurdle rate you require for renewables investment, either in IRR range or value creation over WACC?
So I think Pepe was already mentioning that the new investment, we have foreseen a group average return of capital employed on the range of 6% and return equity on the range of 11%. I think that makes roughly, and the numbers of Pepe correct to me, roughly WACC plus 200 basis points, but I think those are the numbers that we are already contemplating. It's correct, no?
Yep.
I'm going to introduce a question from Andrew Mulder, Credit Design, but I think that this is could be quite interesting to explain that. He's asking about if you think, number four question in renewables, if you think hydro and pump storage is so valuable, why did you sell your pump storage in the UK? Or has your view changed since 2018? Could you sell further pumps storage as a part of your asset rotation?
Well, I think what we did in Britain was a great thing. So I think it's we prepared already as a nice package to make it attractive. So I think it's to sell already a power plant which are in a loss and we has no future. So for the amount of money we have already sold looks impossible. So, and I think we have to put some nice cake beside. And I think we put the cake together with the rest. And I think we sold all together and we make already a very good deal. So I think saying that, I think our ambition is that, I insist on that one. If anybody else, we are making a huge new pumping storage system in Portugal. And the Tâmega River. And we are already in this moment making a couple of more existing reversible power plant in Spain, in the Tajo River and the close to the Duero River.
Valparaíso.
In the Duero River. So I think we would like to get those one, but I think if somebody is ready to pay a huge amount of money for those one, always you are open to listen, and I think I'm sure than Pedro, you will be more than delighted to already negotiate with them. But I think, I insist on that one, we are not built for sale. We are building for us, and I think we believe then the storage, and we saw that in a long time. I think we have already reconverted many of our existing hydroelectric power plant in reversible for many years. I think we are the largest pumping storage in Spain and probably one of the largest in Europe because we transform our hydroelectric in reversible. And we continue feeling that that's a value. Why? Because the cost of pumping storage is much cheaper than any other alternatives for storing energy. And as much renewable is built, as much need of storage is needed. And I think when you compare the cost of an existing dam making reversible or a new dam already for storage compared with a battery for long period batteries, I think it's less than half. So I think that has a competitive advantage. I'm not comparing with other ways of storing, like hydrogen. Storing energy with hydrogen is nice, but I think it's too expensive. So I think that's why we feel that's a value. But if somebody sees that this is already variable for us and is ready to pay more than we consider that is going to generate to us across the life, always we are open. Pedro is delighted to talk with whatever people is already making nice proposals.
Next question is number 7 in the liberalized block from Mickey Baker. Bernstein, what are your view on carbon prices in Europe by 2023-24?
My feeling, and I said that when it was at 5 and it's going to reach 20, everybody was already laughing at me, saying that I'm already absolutely wrong. When I was at 20, I was saying that it's going to reach 30. Everybody was saying to me that I'm crazy, that we reach 30. So I would like to continue being crazy again. Probably it's going to overpass 30. So I don't like to say the number, but probably it's going to be above 30.
Next question, number 8 in networks from Sam Ari, UBS. Can you comment on the UK markets as you currently see it? I think you have suggested in the past that you were not interested in the PPL assets that are currently in a sale process. But can you speak a bit more about why and what you expect from Ofgem's final price control in December?
I think, Keith, I've seen you in a shadow, but I think you are there. So I think that you are just, can you already make comment about that one? You are already in talk with Ofgem. I think you have better information than myself because you are in the, now I cannot go there because of the travel restriction, but I think you can still, you are able to move inside of the country for the time being. Eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, Chairman. The sun has decided to shine in Glasgow as always, so I'm a little bit in the shadows.
So yeah, Scotland is becoming a shiny country now.
we're obviously in the middle of the process of renegotiating the price settlement with Ofgem for T2. We've seen the CMA's intervention as regards price settlement for water in terms of cost of equity. And we think that gives us a very strong case for arguing a better rate of return than was originally suggested by Ofgem in the market. There's still a lot of negotiation and a lot of discussion to have going forward. But we see a great opportunity for investment in the network in the UK. We have a Prime Minister and a government who are talking about having every house powered by offshore wind by 2030, by hitting their commitment and accelerating their commitment for net zero carbon by 2050. And to deliver all of that will require a massive investment in the transmission system and the distribution system, which opens up a huge prospect for us for a lot of investment, driving connections for offshore wind, onshore wind, driving the investment needed for the future of the electrification of transport, and starting to create the electric network to decarbonise the heat system. So lots of opportunity, we think, in the future for investment. And right now, we'll push to get a sensible, realistic settlement from Ofgem for the final determination by the end of the year.
Next question is number 12 in the block of finance in Spain, and it's coming from Anto Bianchesi, Citi. You mentioned that the transition capex in the world will keep growing over time. Do you think that Iberdrola balance sheet in 2025 is fit to take the challenge? Also, if power price were to decline or customer base margin comes under pressure, which could be the favorite option to restore the financial ratios? cutting dividend, right issue, disposal?
God, I think it's, I would like to be a bit more optimistic. So I think it's, we have already, I think it's, we have already demonstrated, we have already, during these 20 years, I think we have already passed through three crises, I think, yes. Three crises. One, we were already, yes, in the 2006, 2007, we were forced to stop our investment and to divest something. Afterwards, we have already the crisis of 2012, 2013, and now we have another crisis. And I think in all crises, we have already take different solutions. And the solution in some cases was already divesting something, in other cases to diminish the investment, in other cases to look for some expansion in some countries we can compensate those ones. So we have already demonstrated that we are already some team, which we are more prepared for already delivering what we committed, even in the middle of whatever situation. I think we are in the middle of a crisis and just already announcing that far from diminishing our goals and targets for 2022, we are already increasing our targets for 2022. I think we are ready. When we present the plan in 2019, we are saying for 2022 to have already a range between 3.7 and 3.9 net profit. We are was announcing today between 4 and 4.2. We were already announcing a flow of 0.48 euros by 2022, and we are paying that one since 2019. So I think we will analyze the situation, what could happen, and we take the necessary decision in all means. I think we have already used all kind of ways for making already fulfilling the commitment we are taking with the market. We are no newcomers on that one. We are 20 years behind ourselves, and we systematically we are delivering what we promise. And that is going to be the way. If anything already changed and happened, we will adapt the necessary measures in all means we have in hand for making already, then we deliver what we are already just committing.
Next question comes from number 16, Elkin Mamadou from Bloomberg. Can you please talk about your M&A strategy? Are privatization in Brazil of interest to Iberdrola? How about PPL's UK grid? Are you considering acquiring more smaller developers with a large pipeline in Europe or outside of it?
Well, I think the plan is not contemplated any M&A transaction. So I think the first thing. And I think one of the reasons I asked to Pedro to accelerate the negotiation with PNM is precisely because I was sure that this question is going to happen. And because this question, I think now is replied. We have already done, M&A is already done with PNM, and in the plan is no one contemplated in this moment.
Next question, number 17, from Rolf Poulain, Morgan Stanley. What risk we see windfall taxes of hydro and nuclear earnings if hydrocarbon prices push power upwards in near to medium term?
So I think we are already in a sector in which I think anything can happen, but I don't know what is the more taxes of hydro and nuclear when we are in a loss in nuclear. So I think it's I think it's fine. So I think it's we give the key. So the key. That's it. So and in hydro, I think they are taking almost 50% of the total revenue, so which I think is more than that one. So, but I know, seeing that is not. I think that was already, in my opinion, and I would like to say, I said several times, it was a mistake was made by the previous government with taxing precisely those things which were the cleanest, and I think trying to promote coal when everybody was moving in the opposite direction. That was a mistake of the previous government. With fortunately, this government has already corrected and is trying to go in the right direction, trying to promote the future with clean energies, with incentivating that one, and maintaining already, just as much as is possible, the legal security to avoid what has already happened, hundreds of already legal actions and arbitrage for all the investors worldwide. So my opinion and my feeling, and that is going not to happen again, and that is already trying to define already very clear and defined and sustainable framework for that one.
Next question is number 18 from Sam Ari, UBS. And sorry for that, but this has a slightly long introduction, and sorry for my English. Your outlook suggests something in the order of 15 terawatts of renewables globally by 2050. In one way, That's a very big number, and it shows that very good growth potential for your renewable business. But in another way, that number is so way too low for a net zero scenario, especially for a scenario including hydrogen. So your slides imply that the world will miss net zero by a wide margin, and this in turn implies that warming will rise to more than 1.5 degrees, perhaps more than 2 or 2.5 degrees. So my question is, what could a 2 or 2.5 degrees warming mean for your business? Have you studied this already internally, and how much can you say today about how your business could be affected?
My God, I think this question, I need already to sit down with Agustin Delgado and the group of experts in climatic change and all those ones to make all these analysis. But I think my commitment is very simple. I don't know what is going to happen in the world. I think there are too many people talking, there are many people saying nice words, and there are not very many people already making things already happen. And we are taking commitment very clear. First, we are the company in Europe with our emission is one-third of the emission of our peers, one-third. So two-thirds, they are already two-thirds more than ourselves. Second, we are taking a commitment in Europe to make zero emission by 2030. I think that is our contribution. So if everybody follows our track, which I'm very glad in this moment that many of our strategy for 20 years has been copied by our colleagues, fellows, and competitors. I'm very glad that that is happening. I think if everybody made that one, if all the European industry take the commitment to make zero emission by 2030, I'm sure that that is going to help to the diminishing the increase of temperature in the planet. So, but if everybody continues saying nice words about 2050, but nobody doing nothing in 2020, in that case, the system will be not, the target will be not achieved. I think it's time, I used to say in my intervention in the United Nations this year, in previous year, the time of word is over. It's time of facts. We need already people, we do things not to, to say nice words. Now it's time for doing things, and they doing things means what is today's, not percentage, grams of CO2 emitted. Not, we are going to reduce 50% of what? 1,000. So that means 500. So if we continue polluting with 500 per kilowatt hour, in that case, all the world will be absolutely destroyed. And I think now is time that everybody measure in same numbers, not percentage of reduction. What is your number? What is your contribution in terms, not in percentage, in numbers? Zero for 50-50, everybody has agreed with 50-50, but what about 2021? What about 2022? What about 2025? What about 2030? Numbers, no percentage, numbers. And if everybody moves in this direction, in that case, your question will not already, they will very easy answer. But if everybody continues using networks, percentage, depending on the year, I take a year of the large, the 95, 97, 2000, whatever, is 70, 50, 80, whatever of a number, that doesn't work. Numbers, grams per kilowatt hour. In all sectors, in all industries, in all energy producers. If not, this is going to be, we will be in trouble.
Jorge Alonso, Societe Generale. Number 15, which are your main concern regarding the plan, economically and politically? Main risks or concern?
So I think we were already trying to explain, Paco, Pepe and myself, what is our ambition. That is what we were already planning to do. I think Paco was very clear saying what is our competitive advantage, which were already our capabilities, what is our track record, and how we've been delivering those things, how realistic is what we already foreseen. Pepe was explaining what is our financial resources, which are our financial capabilities, how we are raising money, what is the cost of this money. So I think we present a plan which is realistic. What is the risk? I think it's all the risk which we are already in all those things. What can already happen politically, which can affect to our FX? What can already happen in terms of technological changes, which can already happen on that one? But there are already things which are already given opportunities. I think how fast we can go in the electrification, what is can be the measures which can be taken. I heard this morning that the mayor of Madrid is announcing by 2025 all the buses will be electric, and by 2027 all all the boilers with fossil fuel will have to be closed. So that is good news, and perhaps that is going to accelerate that one. What is going to happen with our initiative of the hydrogen with fertilizers? I think I'm sure that is going to mobilize the fertilizers industry in Europe as well to make something like. So all those things are negative things, but positive effect. We can already accelerate this plan. So altogether, I think we feel more than comfortable to achieve what we are already presenting today. So there are risks, but there are opportunities. And I think the world is moving so fast. The direction has been of our ambitions for 20 years, that we are much more comfortable than I was in 2021 when we present our plan to doubling the size of the company. And I think you see we multiply by 6 times. So I'm more comfortable now than I was in 2021 when we announced those things.
And last question, after 1 hour and 40 minutes, 2 hours and 40 minutes. And it's in Spanish, sorry, I don't know who is the writer. Basically, los datos macroeconómicos.
Macroeconomic data that we're getting shows that the crisis health sanitary also leads to a major economic crisis in our countries. What is your solution to this crisis, to come out of this crisis?
Well, unfortunately, we are facing an unprecedented crisis in the world. And we've gone through other crises, but this is a completely different story. But my experience, as I said before, after having seen lots of crises during my professional life and in different economic cycles, is that you can always overcome a crisis by investing more and by creating more jobs and by being more efficient, and also by investing more in R&D, in new technologies, and by increasing the training for the staff, so that they can adapt to the new times, and in short, by doing whatever is required so that we can leave a much better world to future generations. We're going to leave an unprecedented debt, and we have the moral obligation of leaving them with a much better world. Having said that, we must also think that in the crisis, there are people in situations, and I've had some very harsh situations, for instance, in the Basque Country, when they reconverted the industrial sector and the shipbuilding sector, and there are sectors that have to be helped so that nobody is thrown out of the system, and measures had to be taken for that. But we need more investments, more jobs, and more investments in R&D, more efficiency, and more productivity, too. And all of this is what we intend to do through our plan, because our plan is the most ambitious plan that this company has had in its 120 years of existence, and it's possibly the biggest investment plan that a Spanish company has ever made in such a short period of time. And we're doing so because we are thinking about the 75 billion euros, and we do not only want to contribute towards the sustainability of the planet, but we also want to leave behind this crisis we are being hit by. With these investments, we can help our 18 or 20,000 suppliers to maintain their workforces, and it's nearly 400 or 500,000 people working for us all over the world. And we also want to hire another 10 or 20,000 people over the next few years. So this is our contribution, and this is why we want to do things, because you can emerge from a crisis by investing, by working hard, by creating jobs, and by assisting those people that in a difficult situation that, so that they can receive enough support from the rest of society to overcome the situation. And at Iberdrola, we are making our balance sheet available to the societies where we are operating so that we can help overcome this crisis through our investments and through the jobs that our investments are going to create in our environment.
Presidente, puedes concluir el acto.
When you're ready, Chairman, you can close this act.
For this, your attendance of this Capital Market Day, so you know always the question has not properly replied or properly or not enough clarified, don't hesitate to call our investor relations team, where they are already always ready to make already further information that you may require. So take care, we'll stay safe. Thank you very much, and I hope next session will be already, we have the opportunity to meet ourselves personally instead of through any screen. Thank you very much to everybody. Thank you.